The 248-page patent for the Moderna technology that was administered to people in the COVID shots was filed in 2020. The patent lists several embodiments or variations of this technology. And while we don't know who got what embodiment, we know that several different batch numbers were deployed, and some were far more deadlier than others. According to the Moderna patent, this technology contains self-assembled nanoparticles, and in certain variations, these nanoparticles can be used for the controlled release of compounds once they are in the human body. These lipid nanoparticles are encapsulated into a polymer hydrogel, a controlled release coating that includes polyvinyls. This has been verified by Anna Mielchia and Clifford Carnicom's research. In a 2013 TEDMed talk, Dr. Ido Bachelet says that these nanorobots have already been successfully developed in Israel and that they can be injected into the human body with a basic syringe. He shows an image of what they look like, and they appear to be the same structures that the Fifth Column found in their research and claimed was powered by 5G, which was confirmed by Dr. Bachelet.
My team developed nanorobots that carry antennas. These antennae are made from metal nanoparticles. Now, the antenna enabled the nanobots to respond to externally applied electromagnetic fields. So these versions of nanobots can actually be activated with the press of a button on a joystick.
In the following video, it is being discussed by developers in 2015.
The nanorobot we designed and fabricated is a machine that can be programmed to autonomously recognize target cells and deliver payloads to those cells.
The basic idea is to make a cage or a basket that protects a fragile or toxic or precious payload and only releases it when it's at the right moment.
The nanorobot that we designed actually looks like an open-ended barrel or a clamshell that has two halves. So the two halves of this open-ended barrel or a clamshell are linked together by flexible DNA hinges, and the entire structure is held shut by latches or locks that are actually DNA double helices. The way it works is that in the absence of the key, which is a molecular protein, the duplexes are held sufficiently strong to maintain the entire structure closed. But when the key is present, that piece of DNA that we designed to recognize that key switches to bind to the key, and the duplex zips open.
The work of Todd Callender's team at VaxChoice.com have concluded that these shots contain a variety of synthetic pathogens that can be released with external 5G frequencies. The Moderna patent describes these nanoparticle mimics, which mimic the delivery of a variety of pathogens, and lists over 100 of them within the patent. And according to the work at VaxChoice, these synthetic pathogens each have an IP address. They are cataloged by the Department of Energy, and they use cesium-137, which we have been contaminated with from the environment, as a building block for their construction within our bodies using external frequency. And their research shows that the Microsoft patent filed in 2020, 060606, cryptocurrency system using body activity data, is now in effect, and that this technology is turning the human body into an antenna which can output energy, meaning that humans are being turned into batteries to fuel the digital AI prison that is being built around us. And if you choose not to comply, the technology includes a built-in kill switch. Thanks to many independent researchers and scientists, we are figuring out their agenda, but they continue to walk freely among us, unrestrained by any justice whatsoever. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the American Journal. I am your host, Harrison Smith. It's Monday, the 22nd of April. If that date rings a bell, that's because for the last couple of months, actually, if you really trace the timeline back, for the last 12 years, this is the day they've been talking about sacrificing the red heifers in Israel. So I guess we'll keep an eye on that. I haven't heard any updates as of today, but we've been patiently awaiting whatever is going to happen. Will the sacrifice be today? We don't know. We don't know. We'll try to figure it out. We got a big show for you today. Dave Riley will be joining us in the third hour to talk about what's going on in Idaho. It's very strange goings on in Idaho. Obviously, it's one of the most conservative parts of our nation. It is also under the most attack, and from a variety of different organizations in a variety of different ways. Very excited to talk to him about that. We have lots of videos. Tucker Carlson on Joe Rogan. We'll go to those videos here in just a second. But let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Monday, the 22nd of April, 2024. Columbia University faces full-blown crisis as rabbi calls for Jewish students to return home. They've actually canceled all in-person classes at this point as protests dominate campus. And after this rabbi issued this shocking warning to students, the atmosphere is so charged that Columbia officials announced students can attend classes and even possibly take exams virtually starting Monday, first day of Passover, a major Jewish holiday set to begin in the evening. Tensions at Columbia and many universities have been high ever since the October 7th terror attack on Israel by Hamas. However, the situation at Columbia escalated in recent days after university officials testified before Congress last week about anti-Semitism on campus and pro-Palestinian protests on or near campus surged. We can get into this in just a little bit. This seems to be the biggest story. Sort of weird. All morning I was looking at all sorts of news. I didn't even know this was going on until I hit the mainstream media, and suddenly there's like 100 stories about it. And again, we'll get into it. It's protests, so I think it's fine. Meanwhile, Israel strikes Rafah, killing 22, mostly children. Israeli strike, but don't protest it, you guys. Protesting it is anti-Semitic. However, yes, they are killing dozens of children at a time, which is good, I guess. Israel strikes on the southern Gaza city of Rafah overnight, killed 22 people, including 18 children, health officials said Sunday, as the United States was on track to approve billions of dollars in additional military aid to its close ally. Well, they couldn't do it without us. Former senior policy advisor to Obama White House has been charged with child sex offenses in a British court. Former senior policy advisor Rahamim Rami Shai, 46, who coordinated with the U.S. government's strategy to combat terrorists from al-Qaeda and the Taliban, is accused of arranging the commission of a child sex offense, court documents reveal. He also is charged with possession of two Category C indecent images of children and possessing a prohibited image of a child. Shai, a U.S. citizen who lives in New Jersey, worked for the White House under President Barack Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and was arrested in late February by Bedfordshire police. He's charged with he was charged on the following day and appeared in Luton Crown Court via video link. He was not asked to enter a plea to any of the charges and remanded in custody ahead of a hearing in June. Meanwhile, the Trump trial is set to begin in earnest today, with a man named David Pecker. Yes, folks, they're rolling out the Pecker for Donald Trump. He's expected to be the first witness called in Trump hush money trial, sources say. David Pecker, the former chairman of the National Enquirer's parent company, is expected to be the first witness called by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office in former President Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial, according to a person familiar with the plans. Pecker was a central player in the alleged scheme to pay hush money to adult film star Stormy Daniels to cover up her alleged affair with Trump ahead of the 2016 election. So we'll return to that story. He's not the only Pecker poking his head out in this trial. In fact, Michael Avenatti is apparently backing Donald Trump up from behind the bars of a jail cell. Interesting developments we'll get into in just a little bit. And finally, we have this from COINTELEGRAPH.com. Biden signs terrifying bill giving U.S. agencies more spying power. Champions of the controversial bill say it's essential to counter terrorism efforts, while critics claim it will wreak havoc on U.S. citizens' privacy. Well, both can be true. Both could be true. United States President Joe Biden has signed off on a controversial bill that expands the surveillance powers granted to United States government agencies, which critics worry could severely impact the privacy of American citizens. On April 20th, the U.S. Senate voted 60-34 in favor of passing legislation that reauthorizes, extends, and amends Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, for an additional 2 years. President Biden signed it into law a day later. An inevitable consequence of having a spy state is you get more spy state. It's like a snowball rolling downhill. It only gets bigger and faster the more it goes. And the more spy powers that you give your agencies, the more they wield them to gain more powers. It's a feedback loop that we could interrupt at any time, except that our Congress is replete with blackmailable scumbags who are happy to go along to get along with the intelligence agencies who now openly run our entire government. So that's your Daily Dispatch, brought to you, of course, by InfoWarsStore.com. Vitamin Mineral Fusion is back in stock and 40% off. Absolute bombshell product. This is one that people love to stock up on, and I encourage you to do so as well. Vitamin Mineral Fusion, 40% off right now at InfoWarsStore.com. Why support InfoWars? Well, because we are tomorrow's news today. We are ahead of the curve on just about everything. And I'm going to show you some videos of Tucker Carlson on Joe Rogan that, frankly, I don't need to show you, because if you've been watching this show, it's what I've been saying for a year. But we'll go to these videos and break them down a little bit. Let's go first to clip number 12. This is Tucker Carlson, again, on Joe Rogan. Some pretty big bombshells in this. This is probably the biggest one. Clip number 12 is Tucker Carlson, I believe, talking about JFK, the JFK assassination. But let's go now to Tucker on Joe Rogan.
You hear Trump's take on the JFK assassination, why he didn't release the files?
Yeah, I know what Trump's take is.
He said that if you knew what I know, you wouldn't tell people either, which is crazy.
Well, that's his position on the UAP thing as well.
Yeah.
Actually. And that's a lot of people's position on it. I mean, you know, Trump is saying, of course, the CIA had knowledge of it. That is known. I mean, the whole thing, it's so funny. There's so many levels and there's so much I don't understand. But the whole JFK conspiracy industry, and it really is an industry, more books written on that than almost any historical topic, is filled with wackos, right? There are a lot of wackos in there. But it obscures, that fact obscures the larger fact, which is the facts themselves tell an unbelievable story.
Yeah.
And so, whatever, I could get into it at great length. But they're still classifying documents 61 years later. Both Trump and Joe Biden have, in violation of my read of federal law, kept those documents secret. There's no living person connected to the Kennedy assassination. It was a couple generations ago. There's no one person whose secrets are being protected. It's an institution, or maybe countries. There may have been countries involved, too. I mean, I don't know the answer, but there's clearly something worth protecting. And I know that when I spoke to someone who'd seen the documents, okay, 2 years ago, and I got one fact out of him, which is, yes, the CIA was involved. And by CIA is a huge organization, but James Jesus Angleton, the head of the operations directorate, had knowledge of this, which I think is well known. But that's the view of someone who saw the documents. So I thought that was news, so I went on TV and said that. The next day, I'll never forget it, I went quail hunting, and I was driving back, and I got a phone call from Mike Pompeo's lawyer. Mike Pompeo was the Secretary of State, but before then, he was the director of the CIA. And in that position, he plotted the murder of Julian Assange, so he is a criminal as far as I'm concerned. But his lawyer called me and said, you know, you should know that anyone who tells you the contents of classified documents has committed a crime. He's threatening me. He's in my car. With my dog sitting next to me, I'll never forget this. And I said, are you really saying that to reveal that the U.S. government had a role in the murder of a democratically elected president, to say that out loud, that's the crime? What about the actual crime, which is murdering a president? Like, you're covering up for that, Mike Pompeo.
What did he say to that?
He had no response at all. And So Mike Pompeo is the one who pressed Trump to keep those documents secret. And so it's like, what's crazy to me is not just that Pompeo did that. I think Pompeo is a really sinister person and a criminal. I think that. I think that because the facts suggest that. He was caught. Yahoo News, Mike Isikoff wrote a long piece on this several years ago. His employees went to Mike Isikoff and said, hey, Mike Pompeo was plotting to murder Julian Assange, who's never even been charged with a crime in the United States, as CIA director. That's illegal. You're not allowed. Federal employees are not allowed to just kill people they don't like, okay? Just to set the baseline here. So that's who Mike Pompeo is. But he somehow intimidated Trump into not releasing this. Well, okay, that's all bad. Right? I think it's criminal behavior. What's crazy is how Mike Pompeo is treated. He's treated as like a Republican poobah in good standing. He fully expects to become the Secretary of Defense in a Trump administration, which is like completely insane. Why would you take a criminal and give him nuclear weapons? Okay, that's my view. I think it's a common sense view. And like he goes to fundraisers and dinners and everyone's like, hey, Mike Pompeo. It's like, no, you're the guy who kept information the public has a right to know secret. You're the guy who plotted the murder of someone who committed no crime. You are the outlaw. You are the bad guy. But no, he's treated as like, you know, like a pillar of Republican Washington. I think it's mind-bending to watch that.
So yeah, pretty incredible stuff from Tucker Carlson. There's so much that he says in that one clip alone. Obviously, they start talking about, well, and there's a continuity, isn't there, between JFK, the JFK assassination, Tucker Carlson going on air to talk about what somebody who'd seen the documents about the JFK assassination had told him, getting a call from Mike Pompeo's lawyer saying, actually, it's illegal to spread this information. And then he starts talking about the way Mike Pompeo plotted to murder Julian Assange. Well, why did he want to murder Julian Assange? For doing the thing that they just said was illegal, for exposing the criminality of the American government. I mean, this is our system, basically, at this point. The people at the top are a cabal of criminals who protect each other and go after anybody who threatens the code of silence. It's pretty simple, actually. U.S. plotted to kill Julian Assange and make it look like an accident. Spies discussed kidnapping or poisoning WikiLeaks founder and Ecuadorian embassy extradition trial hears. Yeah, I mean, you know, to one degree, Chuck Carlson's exactly right. Federal employees don't just get to kill people that they don't like. But then again, yes, they do. Actually, that is the purpose of the CIA. It's a spy agency. One of their primary activities is targeted assassinations, targeted killings. That's why you have them. So they're not good. And of course, the real danger is that they are no longer even symbolically under the yoke of civilian oversight. And that's something Tucker Carlson gets into elsewhere. Of course, why Mike Pompeo, despite being a Trump ally, is being treated so well by the rest of the establishment that despises Trump with every fiber of their being. It's a good question to ask. Because the CIA runs the government, that's why. I really like Tucker Carlson. What about the actual crime? What about the actual crime of murdering a president? Any care about that? Any concern about that? And of course, he sort of subtly, you might have missed it, but he says, you know, nobody around is alive who was a part of the JFK assassination, so you're not protecting any living person's reputation or even vulnerability to being charged with a crime or anything like that. But he says, but there's organizations and maybe even countries. Now, there's a lot of research into JFK, the JFK assassination, that points towards Israel as having a hand in it. And I think there's a pretty compelling case there. And it would also, you know, obviously our super important ally, Israel, in the Middle East. I mean, there's last 6 months has been evidence of what America is willing to put up with from that country without ever threatening our special relationship. So I imagine, you know, keeping some documents classified that might otherwise massively damaged. Like if the documents say that Israel, in cooperation with the CIA, murdered the president of the United States, it might put a little bit of a damper on this whole alliance that we have. So, you know, maybe just bury that. And I think that's a big unspoken truth about the JFK assassinations. It's almost funny. I can almost see a skit, because you're allowed to speculate about the JFK assassination with any nationality, ethnic group. It's the Italian mafia. It's the Russian communists. It's the Texas oil men. It's the Israeli CIA, or it's the Israeli Mossad. Well, hold on. That's anti-Semitic. You can't say that. No, you can say it. It's just as valid as any other speculation. And I think more so when you look into JFK attempting to stop their nuclear enrichment at Dimona. They're trying to stop them from becoming a nuclear power, which since, well, he was killed and they were allowed to become a nuclear power, has been a crucial aspect of their foreign policy, the so-called Samson option. But you also have him trying to get AIPAC to register as a foreign agent, which would prevent them from spending millions of dollars to influence the American electorate, as well as, of course, trying to break up the CIA and scatter it to the wind into 1,000 pieces. And, of course, the intelligence community and the CIA is an important part of the international intelligence community that can't have somebody like JFK stand up against them. And remember, it was not only did they get the war in Vietnam accelerated and continued after the assassination of JFK, but it was LBJ, his successor, who allowed the CIA to start their drug running operation in Vietnam, which set the stage for everything we're experiencing now. And on that note, let's go. Have we censored clip 11 or should we go to clip 13 here? We have 11. All right, let's go to clip 11 here, because this is Tucker Carlson again saying exactly what we've been saying on this show for the last year or more. And yeah, he lays it out very well. Let's go now to clip number 11.
Members of Congress are terrified of the intel agencies. I'm not guessing at that. They've told me that, including people on the intel committee, including people who run the intel committee, the people whose job it is to oversee and keep in line these enormous secretive agencies whose budgets we can't even know. They're black budgets. They're the parents. The agencies are the children. They're afraid of the agencies. That's not compatible with democracy. Democracy is a really simple system, even representative democracy like ours. The people rule. They do so through elections. They express their preference through voting. They send their people to the capital city to run the government on their behalf. Whenever you have unelected people who are not accountable to anyone making the biggest decisions, you don't have a democracy. You have something else, another system. I would call it a tyranny or whatever you want to call it. It's not a democracy. So that's like super obvious. It's playing out in front of everyone and no one cares and no one does anything about it. And I think the reason is because they're threatened. And if you look at the committee chairmen who allow this to happen year after year, they're all, and I don't know, people say, oh, they're compromised or being blackmailed. Or I don't have evidence of that, but I know them and they all have things to hide. I know that for a fact. And so it's not a stretch of imagination to imagine that, you know, some committee chairman who's allowing warrantless spying on Americans to continue or whatever abuse they're allowing, knowing fully or hiding the truth about UAPs, ignoring the UAP Disclosure Act of 2023, like, why are they doing that? It's not impossible to imagine that some guy with a drinking problem or a weird sex life, and that's very common up there, that's why they're doing it. Because they don't want to be exposed. I don't have evidence of that. I don't have proof of that.
Right.
But that's not a crazy thing to assume that could be happening. And I said to somebody, a very powerful person, the other day in a conversation in my kitchen, an elected official, holds a really senior position, a very famous person. I was going crazy. I was so mad about all this stuff and about the warrantless spying and about the funding for these insane wars. And I said to the guy who serves in one of the legislative bodies, like, I got so mad my dogs were afraid. They're like, well, why are you yelling? Because I don't yell at home. But I was like, all these people are controlled. They're all, you know, got weird sex lives and all these things are hiding and they're being blackmailed by the intel agencies. And he said, and I'm quoting, I know. I was like, okay, so at this point we're just sort of admitting that's real? Like, why do we allow that to continue?
You sort of answer your own question, didn't you? Tucker Carlson says congressmen terrified intel agencies will frame them with kiddie porn. Yeah, frame them, sure. Expose, or whatever. You know, either one, I guess. It's not a unlikely scenario. And, of course, we know, I mean, even in just the past few months, they've busted giant, you know, brothel rings where the main customers, the main Johns were, you know, senior American military officials and congressmen and senators, and they busted brothels, board them up, apparently. They don't release the list. They don't release the names. And that could just be an information gathering tactic from the FBI, who still have Jeffrey Epstein's, you know, client list, never released it. And, you know, what it reminds me of is if you look at some of the documents from the P. Diddy lawsuit, yeah, I'm connecting this to P. Diddy, there's actually claims that, you know, everything, the whole thing's about influence and sexual blackmail and, you know, controlling people. And one of the things they said was that P. Diddy and other producers would go out of their way to find marketable artists who had no talent. Because if you have a talented artist, they can just take their talents anywhere. They can go, you know, if you mistreat them, somebody else will pay them just as much and they'll just leave you and go with them. But if you find somebody who is untalented and you use your influence in the media to make them a star, they can't go anywhere. They don't have any talent. They have to stick with you. You made them. The same thing happens with politicians. They find politicians that are corruptible or untalented. They use their influence in the media to get them elected. And then they're in their control. It's just simple, you know, tactics of human control everywhere from Hollywood to Washington, D.C., and everywhere in between. Oh, it's on, folks. Tomorrow, Tuesday, April 23rd, 9 a.m. Central Time, band.videoinfowars.com/show. The Great Debate. Earth, flat, round. That's the question we'll be trying to answer. Hope everybody tunes in. Myself versus Austin Witsit. At Witsit gets it. Robot Polisher, of course, coming out with that great edit. Just hyping everybody up. I'm excited. I'm also a little bit scared. That we put out a poll on Twitter, and it was about split even. It was about 44%. Of the InfoWars audience, I guess, the responders to the poll think that the Earth is flat. About 45% think it's round. About 10% undecided. So what I'm nervous about is having this argument in a way that doesn't alienate half of our audience. That's what I'm nervous about. Because boy, I've done a lot of research recently. And I just get more and more confirmed in my position. We'll make it fun. It'll be fun. We'll make it as fun as humanly possible. But yeah, big thank you to Robot Polisher for hyping this up. And it should be a good one. We're probably going to have to spend the last 2 hours of tomorrow's show on that topic in particular, on that debate, just to give us time to get into it. We'll probably have to skip some commercial breaks as well. Very excited for that. And of course, support us at InfoWarsStore.com. The reason why we can have debates like this is because you support us at InfoWarsStore.com. And as much as I disagree with the concept of flat Earth and think it's a total distraction, I understand that a lot of you fine folks don't. So, you know, we're here for you. We're here to serve the audience. There's no other goal for us other than tell the truth. We've got some more videos to show you here today. Let's go to clip number 5 here, just while we're on the topic of America being destroyed, as Tucker Carlson laid out. What we've been describing here is the ultimate conflict going on right now, the ultimate, as in the most important contest being waged right now, is between the duly elected representatives of the people, as corrupt and as fallen and as manipulatable as they may be, they still stand as a bulwark against total abject despotism and tyranny from the spy agencies. And that is the ultimate contest right now, as we've been shouting from the rooftops since for years, literally for years. And, you know, Tucker Carlson discusses that pretty skillfully. But we have to understand that an aspect of the takeover is the collapse. It is a very simple problem-reaction-solution paradigm where the more pain they cause you, the more power they get. It's very simple calculus they run. The more dangerous the world, the more police powers they get. The more, the greater the threat of terrorism by opening the border, the more surveillance they can justify. If you're wondering why America is collapsing on a variety of different fronts, the answer is it's on purpose. The people in charge hate us and want more power over us. It's very simple. Let's go to some of the outcome of being ruled by despotic criminals in this video. 2 minutes to understand how the Biden administration is destroying America.
A warning to America. 25 ways the U.S. is being destroyed in under 2 minutes. 1, open borders and illegal immigration. 2, rampant crime and unsafe cities. 3, mass addiction and fentanyl. 4, election insecurity and interference. 5, the educational indoctrination of children. 6, the asymmetrical weaponization of justice. 7, the destruction of private property rights. 8, inflation and debt. 9, the global depopulation agenda. 10, record low fertility and plummeting birth rates. 11, unaccountable federal bureaucracies. 12, toxic food supply. 13, vaccine and pandemic disinformation. 14, the trans contagion and sterilization of children. 15, overprescription of pharmaceuticals. 16, destruction of the nuclear family and parental rights. 17, DEI and the new racism. 18, moral and societal decay. 19, the financing of endless foreign wars. 20, the sprawling surveillance state. 21, the centralization and consolidation of government power. 22, the destruction of trust in institutions. 23, the censorship industrial complex. 24, state media propaganda. 25, the smearing of those who challenge it.
History promises only this for certain. We will get exactly what we deserve. That's at Western Lensman. At Western Lensman put out that video. And I would say the purpose of the mainstream media and one of the powers that be most effective strategies is getting you to deal with every one of those issues as if they're totally distinct, separate, and really to leave you with the feeling that they're unavoidable, natural consequences of human development and progress, but certainly unrelated to all of the other issues. And this is sort of, I think, the dividing line. I mean, these are the two sides of the argument. One side wants to treat every one of those issues as distinct, separate, independent, unassociated with one another. That's the mainstream side, because they don't want you solving these problems. And so they don't want you noticing that they're all interconnected, which is our argument. Our argument on this side is that you don't get the surveillance state without the crime rates, right? You don't get the voter fraud without the illegal immigration. All of these things play off of one another. And when you list them out like that, 25 items in 2 minutes, it becomes clear just how overwhelming, coordinated, unified this attack is, with one goal in mind: the destruction or enslavement of the American people.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be joined by Dave Riley in the third hour. I want to open up phone lines for you to call in the second hour. We have a lot of stories still to cover and a lot more videos to show you. In fact, let's go, I guess we'll talk about racism now. Jump to our other favorite topic of discussion, race and racism. This is kind of an interesting, I guess, ironic action by the Biden administration. Clip number 7, considering the fact that last week. Biden's big campaign strategy was to wander aimlessly through gas stations, including at one point wandering through a Sheetz gas station. And then, like, the next day, turns out the Biden administration is suing that company for discrimination. Just kind of just a little bit ironic. First, he wanders through your gas station in a staged act of normalcy. And then the next day, his administration sues you for being racist. Incredible, isn't it? Let's go now to clip number whatever.
Sheetz is being sued over its hiring practices. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission filed the suit this morning. It claims that the way Sheetz bases employment on criminal records disproportionately screens out Black, Native American, and other multiracial applicants, and that this violates federal law. The suit does not accuse Sheetz of being motivated by race when making hiring decisions. We have reached out to Sheetz for comment, but so far we have not heard back.
So you heard that right, folks. Sheetz gas stations company is being sued for racial discrimination because they carry out criminal background checks on their employees. You get what that means, right? You get what they're saying, right? I mean, what they're saying is that if you don't hire criminals, you're racist, I guess, because minorities in this country, on average, are more likely to have a criminal background. Criminal background checks are racist now. And they even said in that, you know, report that they don't even claim that it was based on racism. It's not like Sheetz was like, yeah, we want to not hire Black people, so let's just come up with a reason. How about criminal background checks? Yeah, that'll weed some of them out. I mean, that's not even the accusation. It's just a matter of numbers. If you carry out criminal background checks, you are more likely to weed out minority applicants than white applicants. And so that's bad, I guess. Just the numerical difference is a crime. It's okay. Bizarre. Very bizarre. But you understand how this fits into the wider anti-white worldview, in that It's not that Black people commit more crime and therefore have a greater likelihood of not passing a criminal background check. You believe that the entire system is racist, and despite there being a complete paucity, a total absence of evidence for that claim, that is the claim you believe. So therefore, criminal background checks are racist because the police are racist, and they'll racistly arrest Black people and charge them with crimes. So therefore, if you rely on the crime reporting, you're relying on the racist statistics. Because the whole society and the whole structure of our country is racist, therefore the crime rates being unequally weighted is evidence of racism. Therefore, if you rely on those crime statistics, you are racist. That's how this works, I guess. Again, just absolutely insane. I mean, it would be one thing if it was like, well, we uncovered that they actually are racist and wanted to not hire Black people, and so they came up with this clever way of doing it, that it was disguised. They aren't even making that accusation. The accusation is simply that they're running criminal background checks. That's the crime, I guess. That's the discrimination. Which it is. I mean, that is discrimination. You can discriminate between criminals and non-criminals. There's nothing illegal about that. Discrimination is not in and of itself a bad thing. I'd like to be a customer at companies that discriminate in their hiring practices against criminals. You understand? They are discriminating against criminals because of the actions of the criminals, because being a criminal means you probably wouldn't make the best employee. But it also might mean you're Black, so I guess it's racist now, and you can't be racist. And you just need to understand the world that's approaching, that's arriving at a rapid clip. That is a world in which white people are not the majority, but are still treated like we are. And that's already happening in certain places. Like Baltimore. Like, think about this headline. Think about it in the modern leftist ideology paradigm where, you know, blacks in this country are a beleaguered minority who's prevented from improving their lives by systemic racism. It sort of makes sense in that context. Then you think about the context of reality, and this makes no sense at all. Baltimore mayor promises arts grant to non-white groups, thanks Biden for COVID relief funds making it possible. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott has announced that he will be directing funds from the American Rescue Plan Act to local art groups, first prioritizing groups that are not white owned. Quote, for too long, public dollars have simply gone to the big names and big players in town, Scott said in his announcement. And dare I say, I know my staff is going to hate this, the big names and big players in town that just happen to be white-ran organizations in Baltimore. Okay, so here you have a mayor of a major American city being openly antagonistic towards an entire race of people, stealing money that was meant for COVID relief in order to distribute to his co-ethnics, his fellow black people, and then framing it as if he is somehow combating discrimination or racism with this. Now, that's rude. You're going to put a photoshopped picture of the Baltimore mayor up there? You're going to make the Baltimore mayor look like the pool's closed guy from 4chan? I'm sorry. Oh, it's not. Oh, it's not. But, oh, that's just how he looks. Never mind then. Sorry. Whoops. Never mind. I mean, he's a handsome man with a normal haircut. Yeah, it's really what he looks like. It's really what he looks like. Pool's closed. Sorry, guys. So, I mean, the point of this, right, this Baltimore mayor, Brandon Scott, basically taking money that's meant for COVID recovery and distributing it to black artists in Baltimore. Here's the problem. Baltimore, the city that he's the mayor of, 63% black. 63% black. So, what this actually is a member of the majority population taking money from the whole population and giving it particularly to his majority group, discriminating against openly, actively, and like not just with the money he's giving out, but with his words, right? With the just blatant anti-whiteism, racism. They just happen to be white-ran organizations in Baltimore, right? Insinuating that somehow the white people are funneling money to themselves. Because, again, that's exactly what he's doing. But if he frames it as if it's some sort of, this is some sort of minority retribution against discrimination, then I guess he gets away with it. But just make no mistake, this is a black mayor of Baltimore, a black majority city, stealing COVID relief funds to distribute exclusively to the black majority in order to discriminate against and disadvantage the minority population in that city. So that'll be the country soon. And all these white people who think they're fighting against discrimination by actively despising their own race and, you know, being allies of whatever this is. Just don't be surprised. Just don't act surprised when 10 years from now, as a minority in whatever city or state or the United States as a country, wherever you live, I just don't be surprised when you ask for exactly the same thing that black people ask for, but instead of getting it, like what's happening now, you just get discriminated against harder.
Surprise to Iran in this moment.
Don't. The globalists, like Bertrand Russell and others, proposed, this is public, using neutron bombs to depopulate the Earth. Because they don't destroy the cities, they'll destroy the farmland, there's no residual radiation to speak of.
These troops, forming a special task force, were the first in our Army's history to engage in a tactical exercise supported by live nuclear firepower.
The reactor is programmed and the subject positioned to receive a mid-head dose of approximately 10,000 rads of mixed gamma and neutron radiation.
And within a matter of considerably less than an hour, you'll be dead.
Just extrapolating that out, if Iran hits Israel hard enough, and if the U.S. hits Iran back when they counterstrike and Russia gets involved, don't be surprised if all the major cities of Iran and their military bases get hit with neutron bombs.
No secret that we have the technical capabilities required to manufacture a nuclear bomb.
A red line should be drawn right here. Before Iran gets to a point where it's a few months away or a few weeks away from amassing enough enriched uranium to make a nuclear weapon.
I think the real agenda that we're going to see unfold is Israel going into a narcissistic hysteria and a delusional pride that only Israel and Israelis can generate that is going to lead them down this reckless path of escalation. And I do see the Israelis launching attacks in the United States, Operation Gladio, false flags to try and blame Iran, thinking that we can be fooled, goaded, lured, or tricked into a war against Iran, a military response.
What role in the Middle East, again, does Israel play in this?
Israel was created as the instrument to bring about the Battle of Armageddon and the fulfillment of prophecy, a war that will be so terrible, where nuclear weapons will be used, so that the American citizens and the other people in the world will get down on their knees and beg for no more war. And what is the answer to that? They're going to be told the only way we can guarantee no more war is if we destroy the sovereignty of nations and we come together as one humanity in a one-world government.
Right. And the usual suspects, these criminals like Christopher Wray and the rest of these traitors in Congress, are more than happy to back it because it means a perennial authoritarian police state.
There was already a heightened risk of violence in the United States before October 7th. Since then, we've seen a rogues gallery of foreign terrorist organizations call for attacks against Americans and our allies.
And when I think about the USA, it should burn! Death to America!
It can mean death to or down with. So,
can we get a mark bar America?
We can get a mark bar America. Yes, we can. Mark bar America!
Mark bar America!
The point is that they've not been in offensive posture, but now they're not backing down. For the first time ever, Iran has struck and fired very sophisticated multiple reentry device missiles that are designed to carry atomic weapons in a clear message to Israel. I don't think you disagree, but nobody else is saying this, that we can hit you with our weapons. This takes it into a whole other ballgame.
They could launch another wave of drones 100 times as large as the one that they launched. That's how many missiles and drones they have. They have very hyper-accurate missiles and drones. The Iranian technology is very advanced. And
for those who don't know, they could have the atomic warheads detonate at 50,000 feet when no air defenses are even set to take them out. They're set to take them out at 20,000, 10,000 feet. Just the EMP event of that will knock out all the power and electrical systems of the defense systems, and then the next wave comes in, and you can't stop them. Then they detonate at 1,000, 2,000 feet. And I think Iran is ready for nuclear war. So is Russia. This is so dangerous.
If Israel is so reckless and suicidal and stupid as to launch a major attack against Iran, it'll only react in Russia stepping, closing ranks, giving Iran whatever it needs quietly, China doing the same thing quietly.
I just thought of a new name for our show. American Journal is good. Have we come up with this before? The We Told You Show. We Told You Show. Because, yeah, it's sort of difficult to cover some of these topics because it's just us showing you information that proves what we said a long time ago over and over and then making other points that will inevitably be picked up by the mainstream in a few years' time. Welcome back, folks. It's the American Journal, a.k.a. the We Told You Show on InfoWars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Dave Riley will be joining me in the third hour, but I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls this hour. The number to dial, 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. Give us a call now at American Journal. Talk about any and all of these topics that we are discussing, from the Israeli war to the takeover of the deep state and therefore the government of the United States by the spy agencies, the unelected criminals at the top of our system. 1-877-789-2539. Now, here's another one of these "we told you so" sort of moments. This article is from AP News back in January. Mexico demands investigation into U.S. military-grade weapons used by cartels. Mexico wants an urgent investigation into how U.S. military-grade weapons are increasingly being found in the hands of Mexican drug cartels, Mexico's top diplomat said Monday. Mexico's army is finding belt-fed machine guns, rocket launchers, and grenades that are not sold for civilian use in the United States. The Mexican Defense Department has warned the United States about weapons entering Mexico that are for the exclusive use of the U.S. Army, Foreign Relations Secretary Alicia Barcerena said. It's very urgent that an investigation into this be carried out. The Mexican Army said in June that it had seized 221 fully automatic machine guns, 56 grenade launchers, and a dozen rocket launchers from drug cartels since late 2018. The military-grade U.S. weaponry, which cartels have bragged about and openly displayed on social media, poses a special challenge for Mexico's army, which, along with police and National Guard, already faces cartel-operating homemade armored vehicles and bomb-dropping drones. Here we're seeing some of the video of the incredible equipment and military-esque appearance of Mexican drug cartels. Now, our reading of this story back in January was pretty simple. The American military is selling weapons to the cartels. Well, there's a couple options. Either the U.S. military is actively supplying the cartels with weapons in some sort of new form of fast and furious program, where they were, operated drug running operations into Mexico under Eric Holder and Barack Obama. But that would be like an official program to sell weapons, which is a possibility. There could be an unofficial activity by the Army and Marines. I mean, when you understand the amount of money that we spend on military equipment and you understand, just how awash America is in this type of material, it would be extremely easy for some sort of, Marine and Army officer just to, miscount crates of grenade launchers and, make $100,000 in an afternoon's work by supplying them to the cartels. Maybe you have cartel members who cross the border, get rid of their ID, pretend they're somebody else, become a refugee, join the American Army, and then maybe they can serve as the suppliers of this material. Another option could be that Ukraine is receiving weapons from America and then turning around and selling it. After all, we know that there has been no audit done. There's been no investigation. Every investigation into where the military equipment we send to Ukraine is actually going, where, the investigations of that have all been shut down, but we at least have broad strokes of billions of dollars going missing at some point. So who knows? Maybe we send a crate of rocket launchers to Ukraine. Some Ukrainian oligarch picks it up and sends it right back to Mexico or Afghanistan or Syria or wherever else there's a market for such things. But our read of this at the time was this is probably happening with either official approval or official turning a blind eye to this happening. And it's probably people within the American military actively selling weapons to the cartels. After all, the American government is essentially allied with cartels right now. I mean, they're in communication with the human traffickers, the human smugglers. I report on that as well, where you've got actually Border Patrol communicating with the Mexican side of things, telling them when and where to cross so as to avoid arrest and deportation. So we are actively being destroyed by our own government in real time. The reason I bring this up now is because a new video has been published, and I can't really find information about this. It's a very curious video. We'll read into it here and try to discern what exactly is happening. But let's go now to clip number three. Here's a supposedly former Marine, but I think the guy talking seems like he's actually a Marine. It's a black guy who says he's a Marine sitting in the back of what looks to be a police car being interviewed through the window. A very strange video. Again, I can't find information about who this guy is or what he was arrested for. It's just a very strange, strange video. So let's go now to clip number three.
You're a fellow Marine.
I'm really on orders. Okay. And you probably don't believe me. You probably don't even care. And it's okay. But people are getting hurt. And this ties into a whole bunch of stuff. They've been selling our weapons and our military equipment over in Mexico to the cartels. As in, I've been able to prove that, and that's why I'm supposed to go back to the Master Chief Petty Officer Navy, because there's boats. If you ride around in Chula Vista and go right over there by, what is that called? The industrial plaza by the Food for Less, and you'll see there's Navy boats that came from the SEAL boat installation that they took out, and they're taking them apart and they're taking them across the border. All of this stuff is going across the border, and I'm not lying to you, man.
Well, Marine, I wish you all the luck. Semper Fi. I'm a former Marine myself.
We're going to need a lot more than luck. If those cartel members use that stuff against us, and they are going to use that stuff against us, we're going to need a lot more than luck.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Godspeed.
So again, just a very interesting video there that comports with what we know, as reported by the Mexican officials. They say that the cartels have gotten their hands on military-grade equipment, in other words, equipment that you cannot get from a civilian supplier, right? This is not an American buying guns and selling them to the cartels. Americans can't buy these guns. Only the U.S. military can buy these guns. So again, I don't have any information about this guy. This was posted by Wall Street Apes, which is a pretty reliable, as far as I can tell, pretty reliable Twitter account. He says there's boats if you ride around in Chula Vista, the industrial plaza, the Food for Less, and you see there's Navy boats that come from the SEAL boat installation that they took out. They're taking them apart and taking them across the border. All this stuff is going across the border. I'm not lying to you. Again, no word how, like, what he was arrested for. Why is he sitting in the back of a cop car? Why was he allowed to be interviewed in the back of a cop car? We don't have any information about this beyond the video that we just showed you. So I don't know if anybody has any information about this. You can feel free to call us. But it appears as though there is either, well, I mean, the fact that this guy was arrested, I assume he was arrested about this. I mean, I assume he was trying to, like, blow the whistle or something, and they arrested him for it. So that sort of confirms the this is an operation theory. So whenever you think that, like, if you ever find yourself in the delusion of thinking that anything that's happening right now in America is by accident, I just remember it's so on purpose that people revealing that it's on purpose are being arrested. I would love to know who this guy is and what he was arrested for, but all we have is this video. So I'll bring you what we have, and that's what we got. Let's go out to your phone calls now. Again, if you want to call in, there's still some lines open. 1-877-789-2539. We'll just go down the list here. Matt in California has called in first about my favorite topic, flat Earth. Go ahead, Matt. You're a pilot, you say?
Hey, Harrison. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I'm an airline pilot. Thank you. Yeah, I've called you before. I'm one of the airline pilots that mentioned that whenever somebody asks us about flat Earth, we love to tease about it and come back and it'll go, oh yeah, yeah, Earth's really flat, yeah, yeah, you're on track, all of that, because we love it, it's hilarious. But to actually add some fact, because you mentioned earlier that you've been doing some research of your own, so kind of helping with tomorrow's debate. So I fly with an airline that flies at night a lot. So one of the perspectives I see is when we're cruising across the country, especially what you call the flyover states, but flying at night on a clear night at 35,000 feet, if the Earth is really flat, I should be able to see every single city as I'm going to, in terms of miles and miles ahead. When in reality, at night, I can only start to see the glow of a major city. Like when I'm flying over Texas and I can see like Dallas, let's say at night, I can only start to see that glow at about 150 nautical miles out. And as we get closer at about 140, 130 miles out, I can actually start to see the city light. So obviously there's a curve there. And that correlates with some of the navigation that we use, navigational equipment, known as VORs, very high frequency omnidirectional range. And in the book published by the FAA and obviously the U.S. government with regards to airman information, it's called the Airman Information Manual, in Chapter 1-1-8, it talks about the service volumes of VORs and that the altitudes that we're cruising at in the airlines with airplanes, you can only rely on that ground navigational equipment at about 130 nautical miles out, maximum, right? That it's a reliable signal. And that's all because of line of sight. Mm. So that light signature over the curve of the Earth correlates with that ground-based navigation. And since that ground-based navigation is so limited, and if you've ever been driving on the freeway and you ever see some kind of structure that looks like an upside-down ice cream cone, that's a VOR. But because those are so limited and they can only build so many, that's why navigation, air navigation evolved to GPS, right? Global positioning system, because that's a lot easier. You can use that everywhere. Now, everybody, the question we get sometimes is like, oh, did you account for the curvature of the Earth? No, I don't really have to because that's called gravity and it's uniform around the entire globe. So we don't need to account for that. What we do need to account for is the wind. And there's so many other times I see other posts or I hear people say, well, yeah, how come, you know, if the Earth is actually rotating, how come the airplane, you know, is not being displaced in its path? Well, it's the same thing as inertia. You know, if you were to drive a semi truck and you had a little RC helicopter in the back of the truck and going down the highway at 65 miles an hour, and you're in the back of that helicopter and you take off, yeah, that helicopter is going to keep moving at the same speed as that truck. And it could hover there all day as long as the battery is going to last. You're just going to sit there hovering because it's going to keep moving with the truck. Even if the truck turns, it's going to keep turning with it because it's all inertia.
Right.
Same kind of thing. But anyway, just going back to that, the whole flat Earth part, yeah. Flying at night, yeah, I don't see, you know, five or six cities ahead. I can only see those that are out on the horizon at about 150 nautical miles out. So I hope that helps for tomorrow of adding, and you know, if there's any other airline pilots that fly at night that have seen that, because it's a lot harder to see during the, obviously, daytime. We're not seeing the glow of city lights. But at night, it definitely gives you that clear picture that, yep, it is a globe.
That's what I would assume. And, yeah, that does help. Let me ask, because one of the claims that's made pretty regularly is that I guess some of the manuals, I mean, they explicitly say, like, when you're doing calculations or when you're, you know, mapping and charting a flight, that you should basically treat the Earth as if it's flat. And that makes perfect sense to me, obviously, that, you know, our perspective and on Earth, I mean, the globe is so big that it might as well be flat. And it's just, I mean, you would be unnecessarily adding like extremely complicated, I don't even know, trigonometry, calculus. I'm not even sure what the you know, body of math would be that you'd have to use. But are you aware of that? Are you aware of that claim, or have you seen that in your own, you know, profession as a pilot, that they tell you to treat the Earth as if it's flat? And what's your take on that?
Not necessarily treating it flat. I've seen that before. I've seen other videos where they show when it comes to research with regards to newer, faster airplanes, designing the SR-71, and somebody found something where it said, oh, they all the calculations of determining how fast that airplane is going as they treat the world as flat. Part of the thing, too, is that when we're basic navigation called dead reckoning navigation, which is using it is a form of trigonometry, but with that, it's more of a concern of how the wind is affecting your actual course. I mean, it's, you know, if you imagine like a stream, you know, if this, or a river, right, that has some current to it. And if you point your nose of your boat across the stream and you're pointing to a dock, you're going to have to account for that flow of water, same kind of thing with wind. So when it comes to when we are doing dead, which at the airlines, we don't do dead reckoning. That's more, I'm also a flight instructor, so I teach people how to fly as well. So that's more, you know, down to a basic learning of, like if somebody's flying like a small Cessna or Piper or Beechcraft or something. But that dead reckoning calculation, when it comes to plotting your actual course, if you want to fly from, well, I don't know, Austin to Dallas or something, obviously we're not carrying around little globes in our pockets or in our flight bags. The only way to be able to to chart that out is you'd have to convert that globe into a flat chart, a paper chart, in order to lay it on a table to measure out what that course is that you're going to use. And then you also have to factor in the difference of magnetic variation, because the magnetic pole and the actual North Pole are in two separate locations. And depending on where you are on the globe, that could be a factor as well of how many degrees. Like in Southern California, we have to factor in, we have to subtract the difference between true and magnetic north, 12 degrees, where in Texas, or kind of middle of the country, it gets closer to zero. And on the east side of east coast, you actually have to add. So there's some difference there. So that's what we're taking in more to account of the wind, the variation between true and magnetic north. Also, you have to calculate your true airspeed. That takes into account pressure, temperature. Those are more factors that are involved. So taking that whole, like, well, treating the Earth is flat, and it's like, well, yeah, because in order for me to actually draw a line between Austin and Texas, I'd have to zoom in on that chart, so I can't carry a globe in my flight bag that's going to be reasonable enough size to be able to draw that line, you know, across. And that dead reckoning navigation goes all the way back to, and I'm sure, you know, Alex has kind of mentioned this too, with during World War II, when B-17s were flying from England over to Germany, the navigator was using the exact same tools we still use today, right, between a chart, a plotter, and an E6B calculator that helps you factor in that wind correction angle. That's technology from the 30s and 40s that somebody figured out.
Right. Yeah, it's fascinating. And I mean, how much does altitude have to do with it? Because it seems to me like, you know, again, you'd have to do some very complicated math if you're trying to determine, altitude of a landing strip in Denver on a globe rather than just treating, you know, sea level as the basis and then, you know, going up from there. Does altitude play into it?
Well, altitude plays mainly into performance. The higher you go, the less, the thinner the air is, and that reduces your overall engine performance. It reduces your lift, the amount of lift that you can generate. So that's, you know, in terms of navigation and altitude, it really goes into hand with calculating what our true airspeed is going to be. So that way we can figure out how much fuel we're going to burn based on our true airspeed and our main part, the ground speed. How much is that wind? Because the wind is really what's going to affect your fuel burn overall, and that's what we're mainly concerned with. Right. And especially with fuel costs, all these airlines have algorithms where they figure out, and they're using all the information every 24/7 of all the airplanes that are flying, figuring out where the wind, what direction the wind is flowing, the speed, the velocity of the wind, and then taking that into account when they put the flight plans together that they then send to every single airplane to try and cut that fuel cost down as much as possible. So some airplanes, like the company I fly for, we fly at a lower power setting just to try and reduce that fuel cost and try to find that optimal altitude when it comes to wind and what the temperature is outside, the pressure, to try and get that fuel cost down to as much as possible to where they're making a profit, which makes sense, right? I mean, it's a profit thing, you know.
Now, that is fascinating. Well, thank you very much for the call, Matt. And I see since we've started talking, several more people have called in about Flat Earth. So we'll go to some of those now and then back down the list. So thank you very much for the call, Matt, as always. Really appreciate it. And we're going to go to some people who maybe are on the other side of the fence here, on the other side of the disc. Let's go to Clown Car in New York. Construction companies don't account for the curve. Go ahead, Clown Car. You're on the air.
Good morning, Harrison. Yeah, the guys who lay railroad track, they've never had to bend it for the curvature of the earth. Side to side to get around things, yes, and obviously over mountains and stuff. See, that's the other part, flat earth. Well, there are mountains, then it's earth, so it's what? I mean, we're talking almost biblical terms. I mean, the firmament is a covering of the, not the entire earth, but the flat earth. So at what point do we not all of a sudden now believe our Bible? Like,
yeah, I've looked at some of the Bible quotes, and they don't seem contradictory to me in terms of the earth being a planet. I mean, if you say, you know, mountain's a good example. If you say a mountain is immovable, yeah, a mountain's immovable. That doesn't mean that it is, you know, stationary in the whole display of the universe. It's moving on the planet Earth, or it's moving through the solar system, but it's still immovable. And the quotes I've seen, you know, are like, it'll just say, like, the earth is fixed and immovable, which to the perspective of a human being, it is, right?
I'm happy. Well, I'm not human. I'm happy you brought up the part. I'm part clown. I'm happy you brought up the part about the solar system, because during the lunar eclipse, they're unable to see other constellations. But during this last solar eclipse, we were able to see constellations that were supposed to be on the other side of the globe. If that's the case, that means the Earth spun around in a split second to the other side of the Earth to let us see where the North Star was and such. So how come other constellations were visible during the proof of a 200-year solar eclipse?
Well, you can always see the North Star in the North Hemisphere.
But doesn't that also make you realize that the planet does not revolve, that it spins?
Well, no. The North Star is just the star that our axis is pointing to, essentially.
So when the moon and the sun are in the same sky, have you ever seen the moon and the sun almost next to each other in the sky?
Uh-huh.
How does that explain that when the Earth spins around, the moon is on the other side of the Earth? How does that explain that?
Well, I can't be given up my reasonings ahead of the debate. You'll have to tune in tomorrow to find out my rock solid rebuttal to that claim. But I appreciate Clankar. We're running out of time. We'll go to some more calls here on the other side. Thank you for the call, as always, Clankar. And again, you know, I know so many of our listeners are flat earthers. So I'm, you know, I think at least part of the debate tomorrow, I'm going to have to lay out like. It's fine. If you think the Earth is flat, that's fine. I think there's reasons people believe that, and people have very good reason for not trusting our establishment about anything at this point. I just think it's a distraction. I think it's a psyop, to be quite honest with you. And I'll present evidence for that tomorrow as well. More calls on the other side as we broadcast here across the flat Earth. From firmament to firmament, coming to you live from Austin, Texas. It's InfoWars in the American Journal. Stay with us. More calls on the other side. More big stories, too. You're not going to want to miss the next couple segments. Stay with us. We go back out to your phone calls now. In the order that they were received, we go to William in Arkansas. Says he's having a good day. Good to hear, William. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air. William in Arkansas?
At all.
Hey, how you doing, William? I hear you now.
Oh, that's all good. I'm all right. You know, we're in some pretty serious times. I'd like to make comedy out of all this. I'd like to have a serious conversation. There's no time on the radio. But, you know, you have that little poem by Rudyard Kipling. I'll make a commentary to that. If, by William from Arkansas, if you can stand there as your border is eroded, and if you can accept the Warren Commission findings, and if you can accept weapons of mass destruction never being found, and if you think men can have babies, please, please never call yourself a man. We could go on and on, right? You get
yeah,
my point.
That's good.
It's ridiculous what's going on. We need Patton running for office, not Trump. You hear that, Trump? You need to get an attitude like a soldier. You've never been in uniform, right? All of you sheep are the problem, not the rattlesnake. In America, generally, we get in a fight with somebody that we know, and then you're in a rage. You just don't go fighting people you know. You get worked up. You get angry. So by the time you're angry, you're in a rage. There's no control over your thought, your actions. It's just a rage. A criminal, somebody who's serious, is not going to wait for you to get into a rage. They're not going to pick on you to get mad. They're going to cut you bad, hard. When the people that are coming across this border, the infiltrators of the Chinese, whatever army, right, when they start cutting, you're not going to have a chance to jump up and down with your picket signs. You're going to be bleeding, America. As long as Congress not get the attitude and the American people don't get the attitude of what I'm about to represent, you give me Ray Epps, you give me Eric Holder 15 minutes, I'll have a conversation. I won't hurt them. You keep the cops off my back. Right? Everything else is a game. It's a joke. If we're not going to take a serious attitude to fixing this nation, we ought to just give it away. You know, let the Chinese have it. We're killing, what, 300 a day with fentanyl? And the border's wide open. The kind of testicles that Mayorkas and Blinken and them don't have, right? You think these ever guys ever made a blister on their hand, got in a fist fight that wasn't broken up by the nun in their private school? Right, the very American dollar expands and contracts around war profiteering, right? It's the whole an economical principle, right, around war goods, the production of war manufacturing, right? We sit here and you know, we call ourselves benevolent. Where are the lodges? Where is the real meat behind the words honor, faith, hope, and integrity of character, right? Who am I talking to? Those in the know. But above those characteristics, what's more important? Charity. Not money and time, but to a charity to accept another human being as God created him. Right? That's tough to do. You know? Compulsory service. You want your equal opportunity? Come get you some. Right? What's going on in this nation? Why am I having to have any serious conversation with somebody that thinks men can have babies? You know? I can't have a serious conversation about anybody that thinks that way. And you want to give these people a right to vote? We're giving people a right to vote that can't even speak English. They can't even drive on our freeways. You know? Man, I could go on and on and on. I've got enough years of this. I'm sick in the mind like Alex, like everybody who's followed this stuff for years and years and years and years. We don't watch Fox. Fox, owned by Rupert Murdoch, an Australian, the competition. Why are we listening to another entity, a foreign entity, to acquire the information we need to guide our future? It's ignorant, right?
I think you need your own radio show, William. Every time you call in, I just want to sit back and listen. I got to go to other callers, but I could let you go on all day because I got no response to what you're saying. I think you're exactly right. I mean, I got nothing to add. I think you're exactly right. I think you feel exactly how we feel.
Yesterday was the Texas birthday. Happy birthday, Texas, right? April 21st, when the Battle of San Jacinto took place. We need Sam Houston in the White House, or at least as vice president. We need somebody as vice president that is going to realize that if something happens to Trump, he's going to have to be a General Patton. Patton should have been in charge, not Montgomery.
Well, Patton got killed in Germany, so... I think people recognize the danger that he posed to their system as well. I tell you what, thank you so much for the call, William. I do always appreciate it. I'm serious. I think you should have a podcast. Then we'll have you on as a you know, full on guest. I think that'd be very fun. Thank you for the call. Let's go to the next caller. Joel in Wisconsin wants to talk about the JFK assassination, as Tucker Carlson and Joe Rogan were talking about earlier. We showed the clips earlier in the show. Go ahead, Joel. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Harrison. Good morning. A while back, I called in when Chase was hosting for you while you were covering for Owen when he was unfortunately locked up. Anyway, I was telling a story about a friend of mine who told me a while back that had a relative that used to run one of the three-letter agencies, and then when I went for a visit back from where I used to live, ran into him. I said, oh, which one would it have been? He said, well, he ran the CIA under Kennedy and Johnson. And I said, oh, so he would have been there when the FBI, you know, offed Kennedy. And he kind of like leaned in me a little bit and he said, they both did it. So, and there's a Political has an article where they kind of felt like he kind of took a secret to his deathbed. So, but yeah, he was, his uncle ran, it was McCone. So that's,
yeah,
I
mean,
that was kind of interesting to bring up.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? It would require coordination or cooperation between all of these different, groups. You couldn't do it with just the CIA. You'd have to have the FBI in on it, or you'd have to have the CIA manipulating people at the FBI and infiltrating them. So, I mean, it's a real conspiracy. Yep. It is a real...
They're all part of the same team, so...
Yeah. Real full-fledged conspiracy. And again, you sort of get the choke points. You get somebody in position of power there, you know, leading the organization, and the rest of the organization is in your control. You don't have to go through and compromise every single person in the you know, office if you just have the boss. So they figured out how to do it a long time ago. Yeah, thank you very much for the call, Joel. And I think just about everybody has a story kind of like that. I mean, I have a story of a friend of mine that was doing a documentary out somewhere in West Texas. An old barn house, found a box full of material, gave it to a documentary filmmaker because it was about the JFK assassination. He was like, hey, you might want to do something about this. And that guy started getting calls from people saying, you know, we know what you have. You better put it down. So, I mean, whatever the organization is, whoever it was that pulled off the JFK assassination, is still to this day engaged in the cover-up. That's the craziest thing. And so even though you can have literally millions of stories like that, oh yeah, my friend as an, you know, a member of his family told me this, or I have a friend that found a box of material here, you know, the cover-up continues to this day, and it's extremely thorough and society-wide. Thank you for the call, Joel. Let's go quickly to Ahmed in New York. Ahmed in New York, say, today is Rich Baby Daddy Day. I don't know what that is. Is that a new LGBT holiday, Ahmed? Rich Baby Daddy Day?
Man, let me come on for a second. Yo, this is Yates for a second, man. What up, Harris?
What's up?
I want to let everybody know that Elliot is next. We coming for you, Elliot Grange. We know you own 10K Projects and Ice Spice and all the Nice Spice-ish. Let me tell you something, Harris. They ain't ready for God. They ain't ready for the word of the gospel. They ain't ready for Jesus. They ain't ready for Alex Jones. Y'all better do the right thing, because Alex Jones always did the right thing for everybody. All right, Ahmed, so let me give you back the phone, Ahmed. Oh, yay, man, you need to chill out, yay? We on the air right now. You know, you got to say good morning to everybody. This is beautiful. This is a beautiful day, Harris. I got to say, it's Rich Baby Daddy Day, because, you know, we see all this, like, Drake and Kendrick Lamar, and we see, like, the big three. Nah, I'm the big three. It's all a distraction, because Rich Baby Daddy is giving them their allowance. Hey, go cause chaos around the city.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like
as long as they behave, they get the payout from their babe, from their sugar daddy. I love it. All right, we'll be back on the other side with some pretty big stories. Stay with us. This is the American Journal. I just discovered something interesting on X. I went to repost Dave Riley's post about coming on the show next hour, and he had tagged myself, and he had tagged the American Journal Twitter at InfoWars Journal. And I noticed that I wasn't following InfoWars Journal. Bizarre. I had to click the follow button again.
Darn it, Harrison. That's the last time.
It's not my fault. It's not my fault. It's a warning out there. You will be unfollowed from InfoWars accounts if you aren't paying attention. Just go make sure. You might thought you were following at Real Alex Jones. You might thought you were following at Owen Schroyer 1776.
Looks like InfoWars Journal was following you. Mm-hmm.
I know. Well, mm-hmm. I was following InfoWars Journal, but I guess the algorithm decided I shouldn't. So they took me off.
Everybody should be following InfoWars Journal.
Absolutely. Everybody should be following at InfoWars Journal. Hit that notify button to get the alerts. But yeah, it unfollowed me. So just a little quick reminder, one of the best ways to help out InfoWars is to share our content online. And you're prevented from doing that if you aren't, you know, continuously checking up on whether or not you're even actually following us. So we still struggle under the subtle censorship of just crushing our reach. But we will survive. We will continue as long as you go to InfoWarsStore.com to keep us on the air. We really do appreciate it. You know, I got a bunch of videos. I got a bunch of stories I want to get to. Still got to get to calls. We're going to welcome David Riley in the next hour. But you know what? Let's just go to clip number one here. Let's go to clip number one, because there's been a lot of negative content on today's show. Let's go to some positive content. This is the just thrilling video of Good Samaritans in Minnesota saving a man from a burning car. Let's go to this video. So you see this car is absolutely on fire. They're having to actually bend the guardrail out of the way to open the door to drag this guy out. And you can see just this raging inferno burning these people. Male, female, black, white. Doesn't matter. You know, this guy finally uses a hammer or something he finds on the ground to break the window. They actually break the window, get this guy out. There's the guy who ends up totally unharmed. He went to a hospital to be checked out. No injuries, but look at that. It's one of the things I think all people probably, but I think especially all men, you sort of wait for that. right? Every day when you're driving down, like, man, I wish a car would just be bursting into flame so I could do something heroic. So no big political motive to that. Just a quick reminder that regular people will put their own lives at risk to save a complete stranger from this inferno, and they'll succeed. Just in case you were running out of hope, I thought maybe I'd give you just a touch there, just a taste, just a quick reminder that it's not all lost, that there is still the heroic impulse, despite how much they're trying to crush out all things good and righteous in our souls. I want to go to another video now, because this one I sort of meant to play earlier on when we were talking about Tucker Carlson, because this is a bit of testimony from Cheryl Atkinson, who's been testifying in front of the Congress about ways that censorship is being wielded against mainstream media, not just, you know, dissident publications. But you had, you know, people like Catherine Herridge at CBS reporting on the Hunter Biden laptop being fired and her, you know, being charged $800 a day or something ridiculous for not revealing her sources. And then they fired her and confiscated all of her research material. This is a very dangerous situation, and it's reaching a truly disturbing level. Let's go now to clip number two. Here is Cheryl Atkinson talking about some of the threats she came under, her whole family came under, as a consequence of her reporting against the deep state. Let's watch.
Far too long to be able to clear those matters up.
May I say one little reported facet of my case is one of the federal agents involved in one of the operations against me said that they intended to plant child porn in my husband's computer. This is the FBI. There's been a case that's currently in litigation, unrelated, in which an FBI agent has testified that they did that. They have done that. It was not accomplished in my case. I guess the curtain was drawn on that facet of the operation prior to them doing it. But imagine how you ever get out of that. They knew we had a young daughter at home and has allegedly conspired to do that.
So a couple things about that. Obviously, we've had some experience with that type of operation that's been in the news over the last couple of years. Not only does it make it incredibly easy, like they have the backdoor access no matter what, right? No matter what method you go through to try to protect yourself online, if your computer is connected to the internet, or not even connected to the internet, if it's just within range of some of these devices, they can plant things on your computer with extreme ease. I mean, the back doors are implanted at the hardware manufacturing level, so there's no software that can get around it. It's built in. Before your operating system boots up, the back door is open. So the ease at which they could frame people for such horrific crimes is obviously pertinent and newsworthy, but the fact that they would be willing to do it is also something to consider. Think about the level of evil that you would have to do this to somebody who hasn't hurt you. They haven't hurt anybody. They're married to a person who talks about what you're doing. And they won't just put you in jail, they'll ruin your life. And when you go to jail for child pornography, that's like worse than murder in a lot of cases. I mean, in terms of like how you're treated by society. The level of evil that you have to be okay with, or to even threaten such a thing, is really disturbing. And the fact that these people have not just massive abilities in this country to do whatever they want, whenever they want, and cover it up completely and get the media to go along with it. But now they have even more. But now, because of the new FISA amendment and reauthorization, they have even more capabilities to do this sort of thing. So just a terrifying reality that we have to contend with. Let's go to a few more calls here. Sean in Denver is next on next in line. Line 9, thanks for calling in. Sean, you're on the air.
Hi, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, hear you fine.
All right, yeah. I just wanted to make some points about the fact that, your Twitter poll that you guys took about you know, how many people are falling for flat Earth as opposed to the globe is very telling. And it's really, I mean, the globalists love this. They love that this is pretty much divided down the middle. Half believe in the flat Earth, half believe in the globe.
Because it's the one thing we disagree with, that we disagree about, right? I mean, we can agree on everything else. We agree that COVID was a scam. We agree that climate change was a scam. We agree that pedophiles run the world. We agree on all this stuff, but they have this wedge issue that divides us right down the middle. It's the one thing that a lot of us disagree on. And so it becomes a source of endless frustration and bickering and time wasted. I totally agree, Sean.
Exactly. And that's why this is all done by design, and the Alphabet Gangs rolled this out, made it popular on the internet, blew up some really infamous court case and made it popular because this guy was really passionate. And they blew that up and they said, oh, well, this is great if we could get the resistance to, you know, really be upset or obsessed on something, you know, like the shape of the earth, something you can't change. Well, then it's just perfect. And, you know, like I said, this is a psyops, a smokescreen, a hollow earth. And I'd like to thank you guys for posting my call to the front page of band.video, because this is really what this whole psyop is, why it's allowed to flourish online, why TikTokers get millions of views online. They don't really censor that. But they do censor the hollow earth. That's what really they're trying to hide, because that's what all these major whistleblowers died for. Phil Schneider, Bill Cooper, all these guys got murdered for exposing this. Admiral Byrd and his diaries were the key part to understanding what's all really going on in Antarctica and these deep underground military bases.
And when you look into Antarctica, it's like there's a lot of weirdness going on there. There's definitely something suspicious about Antarctica, what they found there, what they're hiding there, what they're up to there. There's a lot of questions, none of which will be answered if you don't believe Antarctica even exists, right? If they have you instead debating about the ice wall and saying that Antarctica doesn't exist, well, that's a great distraction, a shield against legitimate inquiry into what they're doing if you're distracted by saying it doesn't even exist. All right, welcome back, folks. We'll be joined shortly by Dave Riley. I got some stories. Maybe we'll just plow through some of these stories from Infowars.com. You can go do more research on your own. First of all, from Infowars.com, young, healthy women being euthanized in the Netherlands should be a warning for Canada and the Earth, I think. I think just generally the Earth should look at this in terror and approbation. Looking back at my commentary on euthanasia in Canada just after the Supreme Court's Carter decision mandated the passage of legislation legalizing euthanasia, I realized I was naively optimistic. At the time, I noted that Canada's trajectory would become that of Belgium and the Netherlands. In fact, Canada's journey down the slippery slope was far swifter. It took the Low Countries 2 decades for their euthanasia regimes to reach this point. It took Canada scarcely 5 years. Still, there are a few cautionary lessons Canada can learn from what's unfolding in the Netherlands, especially as the Trudeau government refuses to cancel their plans to expand eligibility for state-sanctioned suicides to those suffering exclusively from mental illness, with sustained public pushback prompting only a pause on the planned policy. Consider the story from Dr. Kevin Hull, where they talk about a woman ironically named Jolanda Fun, scheduled to die on her 34th birthday. Just terrifying. She's fine. She's just sad. She's sad, so the government's going to kill her. Isn't that something? It seems like it always happens in the same way, right? It's like, well, you've got people that are chronically ill, that are in constant pain, that are going to die soon anyway. We can ease their passing and maybe make it. And it's like, you know, they can pull your heartstrings. You really want to force this person to live in this horrible state, you know, maybe the whatever. And you go, okay, I guess for this one. And then suddenly it's like, well, now this teenager is sad, so we're going to kill her. And it's like, wait, hold on. What? How did it get this way? Well, it's because you opened the door. It's because you invited the vampire in. Don't be surprised when he's sucking your blood. I mean, this is how it works. They can always come up with some sort of, you know, reason why empathetic people should go along with the thing, only to realize that it is horrifying in its implementation. Meanwhile, also from Info, so that story's at InfoWars.com. This story also from InfoWars.com. The battle for your brain. Creepy WEF video shows how globalists plan to use AI mind control. An eerie video from the World Economic Forum's annual Davos Summit shows how the globalists plan to read and manipulate brainwaves to make it easier to control the workforce population. A presentation by Atlantic CEO Nicholas Thompson, along with Duke University Science and Society Director Nita Farini, during the 2023 Davos Summit features a creepy video outlining how emerging technologies may make it possible to monitor brain activity and thereby control behaviors. And of course, this is just a more direct method of manipulation that's already being, it's already been implemented in the, in a more sort of disparate form. In other words, what they want is active control over your literal brainwaves. What they have now is a very close approximation to that, as they can read your, you know, activity online. They can read your, like mouse movements and all this sort of stuff. They can get a pretty good read on you anyway, and then they can manipulate you through chemical manipulation of the chemicals in your brain, which is what the entire point of social media always was, as revealed by some whistleblowers who helped found big tech, like the Napster guy. Or that guy's name is Sean whatever. Sean Fanning? Yeah. Who said, you know, basically, yeah, we hijack your dopamine receptors and can manipulate you that way. So whether it's a node in your brain that's actively activating your chemical responses, or whether they just do it through a screen, it's chemical warfare in your mind. Meanwhile, in Germany, arson attack against AfD politicians' business results in massive inferno. This is a little preview for where we're headed. After all, the AfD in Germany is condemned as Nazis by the mainstream media. They're spied on and prevented in their activity by the spy state. And they encourage and have now, you know, are actually regularly seeing the fruits of that with far leftists doing their dirty work for them. My guest is Dave Riley, conservative Christian writer and pundit. He is an award-winning radio host, digital media producer, and columnist. You can follow him on Twitter at RealDaveRiley, where he covers a lot of local news in Idaho, particularly northern Idaho. And there's been a lot going on there recently, isn't there, Dave?
I have no idea. It's been an absolute, it's mayhem up here. It's crazy. We've had everything from fake hate crimes to the FBI recruiting ISIS fighters that are 17 years old, and a color revolution right now that's designed to overthrow the Republican Party in Idaho. So it's been absolutely wild up here. Where do you want to begin?
great question. I mean, let's just begin on why Idaho. Why is Idaho such a hotbed for this type of stuff? And I think I know the answer is because it's so conservative, right? It's you go to places like California and you see this place that these types of where these types of things go, the culmination of all of these things, you get the craziness in California. But then you go to a place that's deep red and you find the seeds of the chaos. You find that they're doing everything they can to tear down the things that make Idaho strong. Why Idaho? Why is it such a hotbed for this type of activity?
Well, I think it's two things. Like you said, the deep red states are targeted. They are under attack. North Idaho specifically having this long tradition of liberty-minded people, incidents like the Ruby Ridge standoff in 1992, where you had, you know, people that were very upset with the overreach of the federal government that began congregating up here in the late 1970s to early 1980s. So on the one hand, you've got this concentration of liberty-minded people that live up here, that want to be left alone, that want to lead their lives in peace. And that is kind of coupled with an apathy because Idaho is so red. My county specifically is 64% Republican. Interestingly, it's also 64% born out of state. All of the people are fleeing from liberal hellholes and coming to North Idaho to live a life of peace. So there's a target on our backs because of that. But actually, I've got a different take on it. And I think that the real reason why Idaho has the target on its back is because of our natural resources. Mm. If you have one of your producers, you can look up Silver Strike It was an article in Forbes magazine in about 2000. And you'll see that actually George Soros bought the world's largest silver mine, which is about 45 minutes up the road in Wallace, Idaho. So we have a lot of gold, silver, galena, natural resources, metals, even some nuclear metals that we have that can be mined. And our mines are the biggest in North America. So that, I think, is the target. That's the target on Idaho's back. They want to strip us of all of our natural resources. They want to go in and extract all of our wealth and then sell it off to these vulture capitalists. And it's been a hotbed of this kind of activity, you know, kind of like gang, mafia, vulture capitalist, you know, stuff going on since as far back as 1927, when the Chicago Mafia got involved in rum running here in North Idaho. Al Capone's eldest brother was our prohibition agent in 1927. So this goes back a long way, this kind of mafia connected exploitative element in North Idaho that has been seeking to control us. And as far back as 1890, there was something called the Coeur d'Alene Labor Wars, where Catholic miners were at war with the WASP mine owners who wanted to cut their pay by 50 cents. So what did the mine owners do when they went on strike? They called up Pinkerton. They had them come out and blow up an old mill. They blamed it on the miners and rounded them up and threw them in a concentration camp in 1892.
Isn't that amazing?
There is such a long history to this thing, and it gets covered up by the media. Nobody talks about it. They all make it about white supremacy, Aryan nations, blah, blah, blah. And really, that has nothing to do with it. It's always been a proxy between the vulture capitalist and the people that want to live a peaceful life and be left alone, frankly.
Yeah, and I'd never heard that about Al Capone's brother. Isn't that just typical? I mean, it's like, now that I hear it, it's like, yeah, of course, that's what happened. That makes perfect sense. And yeah, there's so many stories like that in American history that don't get a lot of coverage. Idaho, obviously, but I know Colorado's got whole monuments to like mining towns that were essentially massacred by private militias when they tried to stand up for higher pay or anything. I mean, this is the history of America at play. So let's get into some of the stuff that they are doing in Idaho in the modern day. What is the hate hoax? And this is the thing. I keep up to date on what's going on in Idaho because of yourself and others who, you know, are that's their focus. Obviously, I don't live in Idaho, so it's maybe not the primary concern. But it's like, at this point, so many things have stacked up. It's like, all right, what is going on in Idaho? What is happening here? And every story seems to spiral out into different stories. So I guess let's focus on now the hate hoax. And this is from IdahoTribune.org. Anatomy of a hate hoax. 1 week and still no evidence of alleged racist incident in Coeur d'Alene with Utah basketball team. This was the beginning of April. What led up to this and what's developed since then?
Well, it's now been a month since this hate hoax was perpetrated against our community, and there is still no evidence. There is still not one audio clip that has been released, not one video, no corroborating evidence. So what happened here is the University of Utah was participating in the NCAA March Madness tournament, which was held in Spokane, which is about 45 minutes away from where we live here in North Idaho. And the NCAA apparently forgot to book the hotel in Spokane, and all of the hotels over there filled up. And instead, they were sent to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho to stay. And so what we were told is that there was a white truck with a Confederate flag that was racing up and down Sherman Avenue in Coeur d'Alene, hurling racist slurs at the University of Utah women's basketball team. And obviously, on its face, anybody that's lived here knows that this is actually not a racist place. You know, the media likes to portray it that way. And frankly, most of the people up here are fine with that because it keeps the liberals out. But if you live up here, you know that that's not actually true. You know, we're a very loving people. We're very kind, very Christian. We love our neighbors. And so
there's just a lot of white people. And so therefore racist, right? I mean, that's basically the calculus.
Exactly. Yeah. There's too many white people in Idaho. But so what happened is instantly, as soon as these claims were made by the University of Utah women's basketball coach. This group called the Kootenai County Task Force on Human Relations and the Human Rights Education Institute, which are both essentially mafia protection rackets, they came out and, you know, loudly condemned the entire community, saying, yes, we know we've got a racist problem. There's a lot of white nationalists and racists up here, so we're so deeply sorry. And there was no evidence at this point. And so a friend of mine, Casey Whalen, another independent journalist, actually records requested the initial 911 call where the guy who called the police, Richard Moyer, he's a major donor to the University of Utah. He was extremely upset that they didn't get a hotel in Spokane, and he wanted a reason to move the team from Idaho to Spokane. So he gets on the phone and drunkenly accuses the entire community of being a bunch of hillbilly, racist, white trash rednecks. And, you know, he's slurring his words. It's a mess. So he had a motive for perpetuating or for creating the hate hoax because he wanted his team in Spokane. And then the women's basketball coach didn't want anybody questioning her coaching ability after the team lost the tournament. So she perpetuated the hate hoax because she wanted people talking about anything other than her coaching skills. And then, of course, the Kootenai County Task Force on Human Relations, the HREI, and the local liberals, they want the hate crime to have happened because they get to tick off a box when they go for grant monies, right, where they can say, yes, indeed, we have racial strife in our community. That's why we need extra money from the federal government to fight racism, right? So there's everybody is getting something out of this hate hoax, except for the people that live up here. We're being defamed actively, right, by our mayor, our city council, the police that are all going along with this thing without any evidence, without any proof. As a matter of fact, the local GOP chairman, Brent Regan, offered $10,000 for any video evidence, photographic evidence, anything that would lead to somebody being arrested and prosecuted for you know, going up and down Main Street. And so as soon as he put this reward out, the police released a photo, and it wasn't a white truck with a Confederate flag, as they said at the press conference. It was a silver sedan with Washington license plates. So it wasn't even somebody from Idaho. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. But, you know, I went to the press conference because they've done this before. I mean, they've been doing this hate hoaxing since the 1980s. The group, right, actually, that held the press conference initially that got picked up by the national media and made this a big story is the group that gave Rachel Dolezal her start, interestingly enough. The white woman, yes, that pretended to be black.
God, what would we do without
the head
these people?
Of the NAACP.
Yeah, clearly. I want to get to what happened at the press conference, because that's an interesting, you know, development here and how you were treated and everything. So I was following that at the time. But let's just, you know, to be clear here, when there's a hate hoax like this, or like what we saw with Jussie Smollett, the fact that it's a hoax doesn't mean that no crime was committed. The hoax is the crime. To do a hate hoax, to, you know, convince people that a racist attack happened in order to gain some benefit in some way, in order to defame this entire community or defame an entire political view or whatever, that is a crime. A crime has been committed. It just wasn't a hate crime. It wasn't, you know, the crime that they claim. It's the hoax that's the crime. This is a crime that was perpetrated against innocent people. And I think that sort of gets lost sometimes. People go, oh, the Jussie Smollett thing, that was fake. It wasn't a real crime. No, the real crime was the hoax that they pulled off. So they pulled off a hoax in Idaho. They committed a crime against this entire community by defaming everyone. So let's just be clear on you know, why this is a big deal. It's not that the crime didn't happen. It's that the real crime was the hoax itself. So what happened at the press conference that you attended and attempted to do your job as a reporter and ask questions? What happened there?
Right. It was incredible. So after 20 minutes of this communist named Tony Stewart going off about diversity being our strength, members of the press began asking questions. And I'm an independent journalist. Here I am on InfoWars. I've got my questions, right? And the questions are about the way that these groups, the Kootenai County Task Force, the Human Rights Education Institute, the FBI, the DOJ, and Coeur d'Alene Police have all broken policies. They've been caught hiding information, hiding materials that are quite relevant to these types of cases. And specifically, I was asking about the Patriot Front incident that took place 2 years ago. Patriot Front showed up to Pride in the Park, where there were a bunch of groomers on stage dancing for kids. The police pulled them over, took their phones without a warrant, searched them, and then distributed the data from those phones to far-left groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center. They broke laws doing this. They broke police policy doing this. And they, once again, got the entire national media to focus on North Idaho as a place that's like a hotbed for racism, a hotbed for extremism. And so my question was about that incident and how it relates to this one. If they've been lying and withholding evidence in the past, how is it possible that we can trust them on this? You know, they have not earned anybody's trust in this community. They've been lying for decades. And if you want to roll the clip, it's incredible. It went from me asking a question in a very normal way, like you would at a press conference. You know, Mr. President, call on me. I have a question. And the moment that I spoke up, he ended the press conference and then said that I was verbally assaulting him by asking a question.
At a press conference.
At a press conference. These people cannot stand up to scrutiny on any level. It's just absolutely incredible.
It really is. And then, and then the headlines were like far right, you know, disruptor, you know, ruins it. And it's like, you know, you asked a very pertinent question, a very reasonable question. Is it okay that this is done to people, that their privacy is violated, that their information is taken by the cops and given to private hate groups like the SPLC? I mean, it's amazing what they can get away with when they convince you that, oh, no, those are the bad guys. They're the racists. So anything we do to them is not just justified. It's good. And so suddenly they're you know, violating these very basic human rights that people have, including to protest something that they see as negative, like a drag show for kids. There was no evidence that there was anything other than a demonstration completely in line with the First Amendment that Patriot Front was going to be engaged in. And yet they're treated like criminals, and even worse than criminals. As you point out, they're giving their information away. So, I mean, but they're racist. So they're the bad guys. So it's fine to violate their rights, right?
By any means necessary. Right. Excuse me. By any means necessary. That's what these types of people believe. And unfortunately, we have a DOJ up here, specifically our assistant U.S. attorney, Tracy Whalen, who is extremely corrupt. She's been involved in very bizarre cases since at least the early 2000s. Her son is apparently, allegedly trans, and she was at the Pride in the Park event herself the day that the Patriot Front people rolled up. And she's the one that actually wrote the warrant for their phones, gave it to the FBI, which is against policy. And when the FBI wouldn't sign off on the warrant, they fired our senior supervisory resident agent. They got rid of him and replaced him with a lesbian from Boise who was willing to compromise on the Constitution and was willing to break policy in order to prosecute racists or whatever. I don't know how protesting a Pride in the Park event with trannies shaking their genitals in front of children, I don't know how that's anything to do with racism. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. These people are sick. They're living in La La Land, and the whole it's like the whole world is an affront to them. They have to change human nature. Mother Nature itself has to be bent to their will. And when normal people say, hey, wait, what are you doing here? Why are you sexualizing children? They right. cannot handle it. They can't handle that cognitive dissonance, and they're willing to be corrupt and to use all means necessary to get their way. And it's frightening, frankly. It's extremely frightening.
It really is. And I even see people on our side saying, well, but, you know, Patriot Front are feds. And it's like, well, all right, until they actually do something that's illegal, I'm not going to condemn them. Like, I don't know if they're feds. I don't know what, you know, Patriot Front's all about, really. I've done some research into it, but it's just not really my cup of tea in general. But they are Americans, and they have a right to organize, and they have a right to demonstrate, and they have a right to protest. I mean, the minute they go overboard, the minute they start actually doing something to hurt other people, I'll condemn them. But until then, I got to give them the right that I give every American. It's right. Our right as Americans to demonstrate and to peacefully speak out against what you see is wrong. And that is really what they're going after at this point. Now, there's a thread here from, again, the beginning of April from the Idaho Tribune. Talk about 1986, a convicted terrorist offered weapons and explosives to the president of the Kootenai County Task Force on Human Relations, the group responsible for the recent hate hoax. That same terrorist put hits out on county residents in the local paper. And this goes on. Levy, the terrorist, was later exposed as an undercover agent of the Anti-Defamation League who helped plan a Nazi rally in Philadelphia. I know this is one of Alex's thing. It's like you see the Nazi rallies. It turns out most of the time they're ADL organized and operated. And people think he's crazy for saying that. Tell us, how does this event in 1986 play into what's happening now?
So what's really interesting is this group that we were talking about, the ones that held the press conference, the ones that blasted this hate hoax all over American television and newspapers across the country. That group is a group called the Kootenai County Task Force on Human Relations. They partnered up with the Southern Poverty Law Center to go after the Aryan Nations and fight, you know, racism in the 1980s. And so they're allegedly a human rights group. They're supposed to be about peace and love and justice and all of this. And what we see in the historical record is that, in fact, they were very closely aligned with terrorists that were offering weapons. And actually, in 1981, they blew up a church in Idaho because they said that they're all a bunch of haters. So that's the connection, is that you have this kind of mafia-like group that is willing to conduct hits. They're willing to blow people up. And then you've got these human rights groups that that form a kind of flank here. And so what the idea, I think, behind those tweets is showing that these human rights groups have been bankrupt from the beginning. They were never about human rights. They were never about making sure that people were living in peace. They were about protecting the kind of mafia that has their roots in our institutions, be it our colleges, the gold and silver mines, or, you know, the liquor industry, whatever. So I think that's kind of the message here. You know, as soon as the people start to get uppity and start asking questions of our ruling elite, they need to create these situations where they're pitting groups of people against each other, and they were willing to even use violence in the 1980s to get their way. It's really sick, and I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah, well, you know, this is why I think it's important to focus on, because it sort of is a reflection of or a distillation of so many other stories that we've covered, even just today, talking about, you know, the Baltimore mayor taking, even though his city is majority black, he's like, well, I'm taking these funds and only giving it to black people. And you realize, okay, everything they want to do that on the face of it is bad and discriminatory or restricting free speech or violating human rights, they have to frame it as if actually they're standing up against the violation of human rights. They're standing up against discrimination. It's just an obvious sort of, magic trick they pull. Look over here at this hand while they do something with this. You know, actually, it's okay we're violating human rights because we're the good guys after all. They have to come up with some fake, usually fake discrimination. Or what's happening in Germany, where you've got the AfD, the most popular political branch in Germany, is not only being surveilled by the spy state there in Germany. They've been basically declared a terrorist group, even though they're most popular party in Germany. They the ruling elite say they're terrorists. they say this all the time. The MSM puts us out all the time. And so what do you get? You get arson attacks against AFD politicians, businesses. So I think, again, just like it's happening all over the world, in Idaho, it's this amalgamation of the people in charge, the ruling power, the NGOs, the media inspiring action. Then you're going to get, you know, groups acting on their own. So it's a conspiracy, but it's not like they're organizing in secret. It's that they're all sort of giving each other cover and justifying each other's actions as they work. And sort of just assumed coordination, not necessarily direct coordination. So I think what's going on in Idaho is, again, just sort of a good example of what's going on really worldwide, but especially all through the United States, as it is such a hardcore conservative place. You sort of see the most extreme examples of the leftist terrorist tactics on display there in Idaho. More with Dave Riley on the other side. We haven't even gotten into the FBI grooming ISIS recruits or the attempt to overthrow the Idaho GOP. So a lot more to come with Dave Riley at Real Dave Riley on X. We'll be right back, folks. Don't go anywhere. I'm joined by Dave Riley on Twitter at Real Dave Riley. Talking about what's going on in Idaho as a example of what's going on really nationwide. And we're going to get into the way that the FBI is operating in Idaho right now. But before we do that, there's this whole discussion reminded me of a thread from Twitter user Lomez last week. I don't think I covered this on the show, but I meant to, and I think it relates to what we're talking about here. He says, woke isn't dying. Woke isn't going anywhere. A friend told me in a small red town in a red state, 500 miles from the nearest international airport, just announced it's having its first ever pride parade, including a drag show for kids sponsored by the town council. This also came with a proclamation issued by the city declaring that the town a safe space and condemning bigotry, blah, 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 suggesting that any objection, let alone active resistance to this city-sponsored Pride Week and kids drag show is somehow verboten. This raises complex strategic tactical questions despite outnumbering the hick libs. Ordinary people who don't want their cities hosting drag kids drag shows are not organized, don't know how to organize, and wouldn't know effective resistance look like if they were. What you're most likely to see is a disorganized counter-protest, some Facebook mom group calling for a half-cock mixed in with a few feds, which will only strengthen the resolve of the pride advocates, give fodder to local media, and look foolish to outside observers. But this is a phenomenon that we've seen, even though you can be a small town, and I think this was in Montana or Idaho or any of these other deep red places. But if there's one person on your town council that decides that you need a kids drag show in town, everybody else just kind of shuts up and goes along with it. And it's just like, how do we activate, you know, groups against this in a way that doesn't backfire on us? And I think that's a question we need to ask, because it's true. It can be one person in a town of 5,000, but that one person gets their way and the 499 or 4,599 others just sit quietly and sort of fume by themselves. Is there a way to organize against this, Dave?
Well, I mean, you're right about the mom groups. You're right about how it's disorganized. We're dealing with that in Idaho, and we're going to find out in a couple of months here, because our local city council, which has been captured by the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Anti-Defamation League, they're in league with one another. They're former business associates and whatnot. They have declared the month of June in North Idaho to be Pride Month. And we've gone from having a Pride Day to a Pride Weekend to a Pride Month. And in the state of Idaho, we've actually got Pride Month in June in North Idaho, and then in Boise, the communist mayor, Lauren McLean, has declared the entire month of September Pride Month. So we have two separate Pride Months here in Idaho that we've got to get through. You know, I don't know. I don't know what can be done about this, because this beast, if you will, it gains energy when you protest it. When you show up and try to mount an effective resistance against it, they use that as a fundraising opportunity to try and solicit funds from the federal government for protection, maybe even things like the FEMA nonprofit security grant, which I know the North Idaho Pride Alliance applied for last year because people, specifically me, wrote articles on the internet exposing what they're doing to kids. So I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, the whole purpose of what happened in North Idaho 2 years ago with the arrest of Patriot Front was specifically to stifle freedom of speech. It was to make people operate from a place of fear instead of from a place of confidence or even like Christian victory, you know, because we know God is already victorious. So they don't want to let us speak freely about this. They don't want to let us mount any kind of resistance to this. I don't know how to mount an effective resistance, frankly, because even if you write an article about it and say, hey, you know, this disgusting act is going to be happening, if one person shows up that's been groomed by the FBI and commits an act of terrorism, then that means that, you know, the people that wrote the article will be labeled stochastic terrorists and, you know, investigated by the FBI.
Right.
So the way that I would suggest to organize is by word of mouth, by private chat groups, private messages, talk with your church, talk with your friends in your neighborhood, let them know what's going on. And very quietly come up with plans, you know, in a decentralized way that's not coming from any kind of central authority, in a way that minimizes the risk for all parties involved. That would be the best advice that I have. But you know, we live in a time where the CIA and the FBI and these Soros-backed nonprofits are all working together to create these incidences of terrorism or alleged terrorism in an effort to serve, I guess, as a to serve as a pretense
for
cracking down on people's liberties and their rights to freedom of speech.
100%. I also say, you know, maybe the most important thing is to get people on the city council, you know, get people elected who can actually, you know, will actually uphold your beliefs and will do so, you know, from a position of power and not be intimidated out of it by the likes of the SBLC and the ADL. And again, we'll get into what's happening with the GOP in the next segment. But for now, let's look at an example of the FBI grooming somebody. Ironically, in this case, for ISIS, I mean, they tell us over and over again that it's white supremacy that's the number one threat. And yet the so-called terrorists that are getting caught by the FBI, you know, quotes around all of that, are still ISIS terrorists. What's going on here? What is this ISIS grooming that happened?
Right. So this was 2 or 3 weeks ago now. A kid, an 18-year-old by the name of Alex Mercurio, was arrested on Saturday. I forget what day it was, the last day of Ramadan. And he was arrested for allegedly professing his allegiance to ISIS and coming up with a plan to go on a suicide mission to a church to kill as many people as he could. He wanted to do that multiple times, which, of course, you can only commit suicide once.
Right.
So I don't know how he planned on doing that. But what we have here is a kid that was groomed for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, by the FBI. He was mentally unstable. He was in and out of therapy. His parents had been trying to do something to get this kid help, and it just wasn't taking, or maybe the parents weren't paying attention. But what happened is, you know, after COVID, he decided to do the schooling from home. The school gave him a Chromebook computer, and it was on that school-supplied computer that this kid began getting exposed to ISIS propaganda. He apparently joined some chats that may have had an actual ISIS supporter in it, but for the most part, it was full of FBI agents. And based on the affidavit of probable cause for his arrest, which was available on the DOJ's website, they discuss how he began having a relationship with this Fed on the internet, on Twitter, in a chat room, maybe on Discord, where it seems like the Fed was giving this kid like spiritual advice, which is very odd. And it eventually escalates to the point where a confidential informant took the kid out to dinner and then to a hotel where they gifted him the ISIS flag and then encouraged him to pledge allegiance to ISIS. And they filmed this for him on his phone. I mean, it's the biggest setup. It's a setup. I don't know.
It's a complete setup.
It's just incredible. I mean, like, if my kid was sharing ISIS propaganda and the FBI knew about it, I would want them to come to my house and tell me, so that I could do something to change it.
Right. It's almost like they waited. It's like they waited 2 years until he turned 18 to launch the arrest. But they've been grooming him since he was 16. He was a minor and he was being seduced by the FBI into being a terrorist. I mean, it's blatant.
That's right. And this isn't the first time that this has happened. There was an article by Ken Silva from Headlines USA that discusses how multiple times in the past just couple of years, we've seen how the FBI preys on mentally ill children and gets them to commit these acts.
And then they use it to justify their massive budget and expanding, surveillance abilities. Incredible stuff. Final segment with Dave Riley. Stay with us. So far, we've covered the hate hoaxes perpetrated on Northern Idaho. We've talked about the FBI grooming that's taken place. My guest is at Real Dave Riley, David J. Riley, at Real Dave Riley on X. But now let's talk about the infiltration that's taken place of the GOP. So far, what we've talked about is sort of outside forces, liberal leftist forces, doing everything they can to smear and destroy Northern Idaho. But the most effective, way to do this is to get into the ranks of the defenders, get into the GOP, undermine that, and then, the way is paved for you to do whatever the hell you want. So what is happening with the Idaho GOP, and how important is this for people, not just in Idaho, but all over America, to pay attention to?
Right. Well, this is super important. It's super important for everybody because what's happened in Idaho is it's like a blueprint for the rest of America. For the past 10 years, we've had activists that have fought tooth and nail to take the Idaho GOP out of the hands of the establishment and put it back into the hands of the grassroots activists. And so what has happened is in the last 2 years, at the last Republican state convention, we elected Dorothy Moon to be our chairwoman of the Idaho Republican Party. She is like the strongest conservative that the Idaho GOP has ever had at the helm. She's absolutely amazing, and she's doing a great job fighting for our values here up in Idaho. And the establishment absolutely hates that. She took the chairmanship away from a guy by the name of Tom Luna, an extremely corrupt establishment hack. He's the man that brought Common Core to Idaho, and he has the gall to call himself a conservative Republican. And before him, it was a man by the name of Trent Clark, a Monsanto lobbyist that was lobbying for glyphosate and all of these additives to our food that is making people sick. So this is who used to be in charge of the Idaho GOP. And now we have actual conservatives at the helm, and the establishment is willing to do absolutely anything necessary to reclaim what they believe is rightfully theirs, their kind of oligarchic dictatorship over the state. And so they are trying to overthrow the Republican Party at the county level. So the way that the Republican Party is structured is you have precinct committeemen that make up the county party, the county GOP. And then the county GOP sends delegates to the state convention, the state GOP. Then there they choose who becomes the representatives for the Republican National Convention. And that's who picks our Republican nominee for president. That's who kind of sets the tone for, the Republican Party. It's the choice between Donald Trump or Mitt Romney. Right. Mm. And so these activists, these establishment hacks, have pledged $2 million to unseat every precinct committeeman in Kootenai County and replace them with a pro-trans, pro-drag queen, pro-establishment, pro-FISA, warrantless surveillance group. These people are the epitome of everything wrong with the Republican Party. It's the Liz Cheney wing, and they're very upset that their candidate Nikki Haley got absolutely blown out, and they want the control back. And so they've launched this campaign to unseat every precinct committeeman. There you go. Plotting hardcore measures. That meeting actually led to a trustee at our North Idaho College being violently attacked in his place of work. So they're really, really agitating. They're bringing in all of these outside forces. They're drawing on Soros money. They're drawing on money from like Idaho Dairy PAC, which lobbies for illegal immigrants. to be able to work in Idaho. So, you know, this is the group that we're dealing with here, and they are attacking every single day our leadership. They're attacking the man who's in charge of our county party, Brent Regan. And the reason that they're doing it is because the local party has come up with a system to ensure that true conservatives get elected to public office, to make sure that people aren't going to the ballot box, ticking the box that says Republican, and then electing, you know, a Liz Cheney. And so it's called the rating and vetting system. I don't know if this will focus or not, but is it focusing? Yeah. There we go. So what they do is they interview all of the candidates. They ask them very tough questions. And then they vote as a body. Over 70 people get all of this information, and they vote on who is the most conservative candidate. And then they take this flyer and mail it to everybody in the county. And that's what's been going on. The conservatives have been absolutely dominating because of this rating and vetting system, ensuring that conservatives get elected. And the people that used to be in charge of the party absolutely hate it, because they pick their friends. They pick their business associates. They get their people into office so that they can hoover up as much tax money as possible and give it to their friends. Right. That's what's been going on. And ever since they started this rating and vetting system in like 2018, 2020, that has really come to an end. We've seen the Idaho legislature doing things like banning transgender surgeries for children, banning abortion, preventing healthcare providers from trafficking children out of state to get abortions.
Right.
So we've seen a really distinct change in the Idaho legislature. And if left unchecked, if we can just continue fighting the way that we have been, we would see the most conservative state legislature in the country, frankly. And that's exactly what they're scared of. The number one employer in the state of Idaho is the state of Idaho. The number two employer is St. Luke's Hospital, which has a transgender child clinic. Mm-hmm. And then the number three employer in Idaho is the federal government. So, you know, these people, these establishment hacks, do not want anybody getting between them and their federal dollars. And frankly, the people in North Idaho, we don't want the ARPA funds. We don't want federal subsidies. We want to be self-reliant. We want, you know, to have control of our own destiny instead of being dictated to by a man who has to focus all of his energy on not pooping in his pants.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, this is what's been going on. And so if the left and these establishment Republicans are capable of overthrowing the local GOP in this color revolution, then that means that the recommendations on the ballot are going to become more liberal. It's going to mean an end basically to representative government up here in Idaho. And it's even more dangerous because right now there's an initiative on the ballot for so-called open primaries in Idaho. And it's not really about open primaries. It's about establishing ranked choice voting in Idaho. And so that would mean that there wouldn't be a Republican or a Democrat next to the name of the person on the ballot. It would mean that it's just totally open. And you wouldn't know who the Republican or the conservative candidate for office is. If they are successful in this play to oust the conservative grassroots base from the Idaho GOP and implement ranked choice voting, it's over. This state will be liberal. And I think that conservatives are extremely complacent right now. Where we live, 64% of the county is Republican. In the caucus, 80% of the people voted for Donald Trump. And so people can get very comfortable with this idea that we are a, you know, super deep red state, but really we're hanging on by a thread. We're hanging on by a thread. I know that there's a group called Stop Idaho Rhinos that posted a graphic on Twitter that shows where they ranked our legislators ideologically. And so you can see that although we have a Republican supermajority in the state legislature, about half of the Republicans in office vote like Democrats. And that's because these corrupt establishment Republicans are not doing anything to hold our representatives accountable. You know, the Republican Party has a platform that we vote on as a body at these state conventions. And it says what we believe. It says what the values are that we stand for. And when we go to elect Republicans at the ballot box, we should be expecting them to uphold that platform, to uphold our Christian values. And they haven't been, right? They haven't been. They've been getting in as Republicans and governing like Democrats.
Right.
And so the goal that has been going on for the past 2 years is to ensure that when we elect a Republican, that they're going to legislate like a Republican. Like when you right. buy Coca-Cola, you're not going to open it up and get Fanta.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, wanting to hold your elected representatives to account for why you voted on them. I mean, obviously, clearly it's a counterattack against what has been an extremely successful strategy of turning Idaho, you know, into the deep red that it should be. So, you know, if nothing else, you can at least pat yourself on the back in putting them on the back foot and forcing them to respond to you. I think it's incredible what y'all have been able to pull off and the fact that you're recognizing and doing something to combat what's coming at you next. Really incredible. Incredible stuff at Real Dave Riley on X. Thank you so much for being here with us, Dave. That's going to do it for us. Tune in tomorrow for the Big Flat Earth debate. See you there.